was on a long car journey recently, and the official charts were playing on the radio. Now, I'll be honest, it's not my usual vibe, but it's interesting, isn't it? So thought, roll with it, see what's charting, what's popular at the moment. And Sarah, my wife, halfway through, says, it's funny, when you listen for it, so many songs are about love. When you're listening for it, so many of them, all about love. So many of the top songs, the charts, the most downloaded, streamed, bought songs are love songs in some way or another. It's no secret that I've been adding to a playlist of songs as I've gone through this sermon series, thinking about the way that songs communicate truth, don't they? Making us feel things. And they evoke reactions within us. But so many of the most popular songs are about love. Or you go to a cinema, and at any one time, you can probably guarantee that you're going to be able to find a love story on in the cinema. Again, it's not really quite my vibe, but our society and culture, from our popular media, we can see that we have a lot to say about love. There's a lot that we can learn, for better or for worse, about love from our films and our songs. Some may prefer the light-hearted rom-coms or those, art house films of two unlikely lovers making their way through the world. Others are a sucker for the romantic tragedy, aren't they? They don't want to laugh and be charmed. They want to tug on the heartstrings in a good cry. It speaks to the spectrum, that wide spectrum of human experience when it comes to love. It shows us that we have different experiences of love, and some of us are a bit more idealistic, some of us perhaps a bit more pessimistic. Most of us probably are a bit of a mix, aren't we? The book of the Song of Solomon is a collection of poems in the Old Testament. It's an album of love songs, really, isn't it? Each one slightly different in its own way, but it tells the story of a romance. The overall theme is that God designed human love, marriage, and sex to reflect a greater reality, to signpost his love for his people, and that we're to be in a loving relationship with him. But our experience of love can be so mixed, can't it? Certainly no one's experience is perfect, is it? From heartbreaks to just hard work, love in an imperfect world, in a fallen world, as Christians call it, is supposed to lead us into a deeper relationship with God. So today we arrive in chapter 5, verse 2, and we start with a nightmare of the bride's. Remember how in chapter 3 she had a dream? Well, we've got another one here, don't we? 5, verse 2, I slept, but my heart was awake. I think it's fair to say that this is another dream. She's asleep, but her heart is awake. It's a dream. It's a nightmare evening, because the first thing that we see in this dream is a devastating desertion. A devastating desertion. The dream, it starts well enough. Her beloved is at the door, verse 2, knocking, let me in. It's soaking out here. My hair is wet with dew. But verse 3, I've put off my garment. How can I put it back on? I've bathed my feet. How could I soil them? I've got cozy in bed. Are you really going to make me get up and open the door? Look, I've washed my feet. A common thing to do in the evening, as life was such a dirty business when you're just wearing sandals in a hot country. If she's going to get up to go to the door, she'd have to clean her feet all over again. She'd have to get dressed. I'm nice and tucked up in bed. What? Are you really going to make me do that? Eventually, her man tries harder to get in, and she has a change in heart, suddenly excited and her heart thrilled within her, verse 6. She opens the door, and he's gone. She wanted to let him in, and he's left. She is left feeling deserted on her doorstep. She could have taken a leaf from that Bruno Mars song and left the door open, but instead, she was just too late and left it closed. Maybe she took too long. Maybe he was perhaps impatient. Either way, it gets slightly surreal here, doesn't it? I sought him and found him not. I called him and gave him no answer. She can't find him, and I imagine it's one of those frantic dreams at this point. You know, she's sprinting through the city at night in a panic. The watchmen of the city, they find her, don't they? And probably mistaking her for somebody immoral being out at night, they beat her, punish her, strip her. And then she addresses the daughters of Jerusalem. If you find my beloved, you have to tell him I'm looking for him. Verse 8, I am sick with love. It's a devastating desertion that really goes from bad to worst, from being left on her doorstep to being beaten in the city, from her initial rejection of her man to his subsequent disappearance. It's a really bad dream for her. The man makes an advance. Let me in. And he's shut down. And in terms of sex and sexual union, there's all kind of reasons why we might say that it's not on the cards. It's not something that the man is owed, is it? He isn't going to force himself on her. That much is perfectly evident. He's held up as a paragon of what it means to be a man. And it may seem obvious not forcing yourself on your wife. But we have to read with 21st century eyes and remember, well, it only took till the 21st century in the UK for marital rape to be made illegal. It's shocking, and it should have been done sooner. Here in songs, it seems like it's just a miscommunication. She's cozy, tucked up in bed. He is in a rush. Some of those commentators take verse 3 to be more of a suggestive, flirtatious response, which just appears to miss the mark with her man, and suddenly he's gone. Either way, we can see that it's a lack of communication around expectations, around how they initiate intimacy. All sorts of issues in relationships require all sorts of solutions. But a key constant is that couples have to be on the same page and communicating well. And that's so clear in issues of intimacy. One of you is feeling overworked, tired out, and worn down. Or perhaps it's just been the worst day with the kids, and everything has gone wrong, and you just need someone to talk to and just have a normal adult conversation with. Maybe you feel yourself getting older. You don't look how you once did, and where you once delighted in the giving of yourself to your spouse, you now feel awkward or embarrassed. There can be times, can't there, where it seems you're just not sure how to get through what you're feeling. What you mean. It seems you always end up saying the wrong thing and you don't quite know how it comes out of your mouth in that way. Maybe once you were hurt when you were opening up. You made yourself vulnerable that one time and it went so wrong that never again will I open up like that. Or perhaps it's been a cycle. You trust somebody, you open up. You get hurt and you try again and try again. Now it just feels like you might not be able to open up even if you try. The baggage can feel just too much. Whatever the reason, it needs a working through, doesn't it? The woman in Song of Songs makes it clear that she really wants to work this out. She struggles through the humiliation of the night watch to even have a chance of seeing her love. The daughters of Jerusalem, they respond to her in quite a strange way, don't they? When she asks, you know, have you seen my love? Verse 9, maybe they're not quite getting it. They say, who is your beloved? What's so special about him? What makes him so much better than everybody else's? Her response shows us a longing for love. She praises here just how awesome her beloved is. She launches into one of those poetic descriptions that we've seen again and again in Song of Solomon. We've seen it before. Verse 10, he is radiant and ruddy, distinguished among 10,000. Perhaps her accuracy isn't what she's going for here. A crowd of 10,000 is quite a lot, isn't it? His head is finest gold. His locks are wavy, black as a raven. His barber probably charges him double. Verse 12, eyes you can get lost in like doves. Verse 13, his cheeks like beds of spices, mounds of sweet-smelling herbs, like an incense-like quality to them. He's handsome, not just in looks, but in his very presence. Verse 14, his arms are like rods of gold, his body polished ivory. Verse 15, his legs are alabaster columns. He's strong, sturdy, beautiful, bedecked in jewels. She finishes verse 16, this is who I love. This is who I am seeking. This is who I want. And then the chorus responds again. And from what is your beloved to where is your beloved gone, O most beautiful among women? Where is your beloved that we may seek him with you? Her description did the job, didn't it? They've gone from the what to the where. From what's so special to saying, okay, he's clearly exceptional. How can we find him? And her reply is an interesting one, isn't it? In chapter 6, 2 and 3, my beloved has gone down to his garden, to the beds of spices, to graze in the gardens and gather lilies. I am my beloved, and my beloved is mine. He grazes among the lilies. Her response is slightly confusing, isn't it? It doesn't seem to really fit that she's still lost her man. It seems like she's more recounting a special time that they've had together. Remember when the garden metaphor was used to talk about their sexual union? Remember that the garden had once been locked, closed off from one another before they were married, and then now it's been opened up. Her sexuality awakened and expressed with her husband. Why is she saying this now? All the urgency has gone, and suddenly she seems quite happy and content. It could be that in all the recounting, the ways that her man is special, handsome, beautiful, strong, sturdy, her heart has been quieted, calmed down. She thinks, yes, that's who my beloved is. Her response is assured. I'll tell you where he's gone. He's been to the garden. He is mine, and I am his. I've no need to fear separation from him. It could be that at this moment, rather than finding her love, she's actually more found by him. And it almost skips through the reunion and to once again sharing sexual intimacy, that mutual giving of themselves in the garden. It's a beautiful mutuality expressed by them, isn't it? My beloved is mine, and I am his. There's no sense of being possessed in a negative sense there, is there? But a wonderful self-giving and receiving of him as well. Whatever's happening in the narrative here, I don't think it's so much the point. So much as that we see that the longing for love is present here. She's expressing a deep longing, so desperately searching. Gives a wonderful description, and her heart is really set on finding him. She describes herself sick with love. She wants to love him and really wants to be loved by him. She's willing to go to extreme measures, willing to give one of the most extraordinary descriptions of a man ever, isn't she? She taps into a feeling that many of us feel in one way or another. A longing for love, whether it's to show love or to be loved. Whether we're married and our spouse travels for work and we long for their return. Whether our marriage is taking incredible hard work and we're longing for times when love was simpler, easier, and just came more naturally. It's worth remembering that love takes work, isn't it? Hard work. But there can still be that longing. Or maybe our longing takes forms of regrettable loss. Maybe through separation, through divorce. Maybe through a love that no longer really burns and the love just seems lost to us. Perhaps you aren't sure if you can really love and it seems too painful to talk about that process again. This all speaks to a longing for love and a longing to be loved. Our world comes up with various reasons and explanations for our deep sense of longing, doesn't it? Our longing for love. For some, it's simply a process of evolution. Love and care is desirable because it helps us to breed. It helps us to pass on our genes. For others, longing and love is a psychological phenomena that's not really about love. It's about sex, about love and longing is our actual love and longing for sexual fulfillment. I'll explain our longing for love simply as that we are loving wrong. If we aren't satisfied, if we find ourselves longing, then we must simply be in the wrong place with the wrong person, loving in the wrong way. And we might be satisfied with the new for a while, but as soon as the longing returns, well, it's time to get out and go searching again, out with the old and in with the new. The simple explanation that the Bible gives for this longing for love, this sick with love, and the devastation of the desertion, is summed up by Augustine when he says that our hearts are restless until they rest in God. Remember how throughout this series of Song of Solomon, we've been talking about there's two ways of reading this book. One has been to look at what is happening in the poem, and the other has been to see the truth that the poem points to. Let's look then at the truth that this poem points to, the gospel fulfillment of this passage. The gospel fulfillment of this passage is easily summed up that love in our fallen world is to lead us deeper into the arms of God. When we think about the devastating desertion, there's an obvious biblical message there, isn't there? In Revelation chapter 3, verse 20, God says, "Here I am, I stand at the door and knock. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come in and eat with that person and they with me." Jesus says that his sheep hear his voice. Like the beloved who in songs, who stands outside, Jesus stands there and knocks. And yet so often we're so slow to listen. We come up with our countless reasons and excuses for not following him. It's unlikely to be, "Oh, I've just washed my feet," or "I've just taken my robe off." But perhaps like the woman in songs, we've got comfy, cozy with our life, how it is. Maybe you've been exploring Christianity and you're tuned in online or you're here on the barge and you've been wrestling with the niggling feeling that now is actually the time to come to Jesus. There is no better time. There's no better place than right here. So don't put it off any longer. For others, you may believe, you may trust in the Lord as your Savior. But perhaps there's a corner of your heart that simply is being held onto as your own, that you'd rather be Lord over instead of God being Lord over. Well, today, hear him knocking. It's easy to make excuses. I'm comfortable as I am. I think God's been doing a great work in me, and if we could just go my own way for a bit, that would be great. I don't think I'm ready for God to have the final say. Whatever it is that is holding you back, it is a great idea to give those things over to God, to ask for his help. You don't need to delay. Our problem, though, in this devastating desertion is that we don't like to give up our sin. We won't give up our idols. These are the Bible's words for rebelling against God and for worshipping things other than himself, sin and idolatry. The Lord Jesus, well, he lived a perfect life. He went to the cross, becoming sin for us that we might receive his righteousness. And this means we can have a perfect relationship with him. He will one day be the ultimate bridegroom, and we will be his bride. We can be united to him. But so often we prefer to be united to our sin. It's almost nowhere made more clear than the area of sex and what we do with our bodies. Paul writes in 1 Corinthians 6 that the body is not made for sexual immorality, but for the Lord. In verse 16, Paul writes, "Do you not know that your bodies are members of Christ himself? Shall I then take members of Christ and unite them with a prostitute? Never. Do you know that he who unites himself with a prostitute is one with her body? For it is said the two will become one flesh." Verse 17, "But whoever is united with the Lord is one with him in spirit." If we choose to be united with anything other than Christ, we become one flesh with it. Our idols, our sin, must be given over to him. And where the instruction for marriage between a man and a woman is that they become one flesh. So if we disobey God's design for our bodies, for sex and marriage, then we become one flesh with another, uniting ourselves with somebody who is not our spouse. And there's great consequence for this. If we remain united to sin and not to Christ, even if we say he is Lord, it may become clear on the final day that we never knew him and he never knew us. Devastating desertion, therefore, can be on two levels when speaking of gospel fulfillment. On the one hand, if we remain united to sin, if we keep Christ on the outside, so to speak, that's one kind of desertion, isn't it? But we'll find a greater desertion if we persist. As Christ looks on us and says he never knew us, if he turns his back on us on the final day, if rather than us being his bride and he our bridegroom, we find ourselves instead judged and found guilty. So let's hear his voice and not delay in coming to him. Leave the door open. See that he stands there and wants you. The gospel fulfillment of longing for love. As Augustine had said, our hearts are restless until they rest in you. We see that longing all throughout this passage, don't we? Imagine ourselves in that position, longing, looking for love. And we can only find that ultimately fulfilled in the love of Christ. Think again about the woman's description of her love in chapter 5, 10 through 16. There's realistically no human who can measure up to that. No human but one, Jesus Christ, God taking on flesh. So much of this description actually points us towards him. Radiant and ruddy. Remember when King David is described as ruddy? And we look at David, we're supposed to see a type of Christ. David is to point us towards Jesus. Him having a head of gold, everything set with jewels, ivory, alabaster, cedars from Lebanon. Where might we find similar description in the Bible? The Old Testament descriptions of the temple, right? The point being that this points us towards God's presence on earth, ultimately fulfilled in Jesus Christ. No one can ever love in such a way as to make us feel as perfect a love as is available from Christ. His love for us shown on the cross overcomes the devastating desertion of our own sinful rebellion and means that when he comes again, we won't be deserted, but will be united with him in the ultimate marriage. It makes sense, doesn't it, that we have all these really deep longings that seem unable to be fulfilled. If we look for our spouse for fulfillment, well, we put on them a weight that they can't bear. If we place this longing on the idea of marriage, then it'll never live up to those expectations. The only place we can take our longings is to the one that we're ultimately longing for, Christ. When we take to him our desire to be loved, our longing for love, we find that he is ours and we are his. 6 verse 3. The parallel in 1 Corinthians 6 between becoming one flesh in 6:16 and then verse 17, he who is joined to the Lord becomes one spirit with him. This shows us, doesn't it, that even in our despair at difficult marriages, in our hurt over lost loves, in our singleness, even in the depths and the miseries of sin, what is available to us? A love from God of the universe that means we can say, my beloved is mine and I am his. Paul tells us that we have the Holy Spirit, God himself, living in us in verse 19. And therefore, we're not our own, but we're bought with a price. That price is Christ's sacrifice on the cross, dying that horrific death so that we might be saved. We can take him, we can take to him our longing to be loved, no matter what our experience of love is on this earth. We can see that desire fulfilled in greater and greater intimacy with him. As we're supposed to work on earthly relationships, we're also supposed to work on our heavenly relationship too. So love in a fallen world should lead us deeper into the arms of God, deeper into the Father's arms of love. Whatever our experiences of love, whether we relate to the sunshine and roses of rom-coms, or we really just see ourselves in the tragic romance, whether we've had good experiences, bad experiences, terrible times at the hands of those who are supposed to be our nearest and dearest, we can see there is within us a devastating desertion towards the Lord Jesus Christ, And we need to leave the door open to him. And in doing so, find our longing for love transformed and satisfied. We must lift our eyes from this world for satisfaction and move deeper into relationship with Christ.